When the rules of society are broken, things can get a little wild. This is Wild Society. Hey guys, welcome back to Wild Society, a true crime comedy podcast. Every week we bring you two stories, one story about murder and the other story about some crazy, wild, true story.
That's true. It's true that it's true crime.
Partly true.
That was Jordan Nichols. I'm Chad Previch Nichols. I'm going to use my hyphenated name on this episode. It's a special episode.
They're married.
Chad Previch Nichols.
We're married?
I think so.
Oh. I'm Bethany Young.
And I'm Courtney.
Welcome to week three.
Yay.
Who are they?
Who are we welcoming? There's Bethany, there's no one in this room. That's weird. Talking to herself.
Welcoming the spirits.
How's everyone doing?
I'm doing great. I'm drinking a Will and Wiley pineapple seltzer.
Yummy.
Is it good?
It is really good. It's canned by a local brewery. Shout out to Coop.
Oh, it's Coop? I didn't know that. That's amazing. I'm drinking a strawberry wine. I think they're from Indiana.
I'm going to have that song stuck in my head for the next hour.
You're drinking a peach wine?
Yeah. Holding on to the last bits of summer, even though I love fall way more, but I needed to finish this bottle.
You can tell we are not wine connoisseurs.
Everything we're drinking is like a different fruit flavor.
Not mine. I've got the IPA going. Local Anthem Brewing.
She goes hard.
Shout out.
I got my flu shot today.
Me too.
And my arm's already hurting. I was annoying at work because I was walking around rubbing it and like moaning and stuff like that.
Mine doesn't hurt at all. Like I don't feel.
Well, there was a kid behind me who got it shot and they got a lollipop. I didn't get a lollipop.
So really it hurt your pride.
It does. No, I'm full acceptance of how I'm terrified of medical procedures. Right.
This is how terrified. You know we deal in true crime, because all I got for that conversation was a kid behind me got shot.
That's what I heard too. I was like, what?
Shot with a needle. Just I did not
got
witness
a
murder
shot
today.
With a needle.
Yes. But I got a Scooby-Doo Band-Aid from it. Aww. It was very nice.
Taking you back.
Draggy?
I just got a generic Band-Aid.
I guess I'm better than you.
I guess so.
I haven't gotten mine yet. But I'm going to go get mine at Target because you get a free $5 gift card.
Oh, my God.
Basic bitch.
Jordan, you want to go with me?
Yeah.
We can both get $5 gift cards.
So you're going to get your flu shot at Target so you get a free toothpaste?
No, so she can get something from Joanna.
I can get like five things from the dollar spot with a $5 gift card.
That's like when you walk in, it's all that stuff right there.
There's actually surprisingly really good things in there.
I know. I look every time I go in.
I mean, you gotta look.
That's the most basic thing you've said so far in the podcast.
I'm proud.
True colors.
You should be proud.
Thanks. Okay, this week we have to talk about the awesome hoodies that Jordan and Chad got us.
Yeah.
Jordan
our
got.
Logo. Yay. Wearing it. It's the softest
really
hoodie
soft,
ever.
I do have to say. I thought they were going to be, I was worried they were going to be like cheap.
We showed up to record and Jordan surprised us with the first official Wild Society apparel.
Yay.
I'm just the gift that keeps on giving.
It is.
And next week we're all going to get matching tattoos.
Hex. Yeah. Bethany's getting on her butt.
Oh, no.
Bethany, she has 17 ass tattoos right now. There's no more room for it.
That's a secret.
Not one anymore. For every Marilyn Monroe lovers.
Bethany, what's your favorite Marilyn Monroe movie? Did we discuss that? I don't think we did.
No, that's really hard.
Oh God, this is going to be like
I know.
A thesis.
I don't think I can give you just one. I like them. I like so many of them.
We got a big shout out while I was taking out the garbage a little while ago.
A neighbor?
From our neighbor, Rachel. She was walking her daughter and she was talking about how she was almost done with episode one from her drive from Ardmore, Oklahoma. She's very excited to finish it.
Love it. Yay. We have the most amazing listeners. We've just been blown away by all the reviews, all the messages. It makes us so happy.
Hey, Bethany, I have a question.
Yeah.
If people are looking for more information or social media accounts, where should they go?
They should go to our website, Chad. www.wildsocietypodcast.com. You can find links to all of our social media. You can also see all of our previous episodes and the newest episode, along with show notes and pictures that accompany the episode that you hear us talk about.
And just want to say a shout out to all the subscribers in the 11 countries and 141 cities.
So crazy.
Now.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah. Speaking of our listeners, our friend Mandy from Tulsa let us know a little bit of a new update on history, a really tragic story.
Yes. And I'm so glad that she pointed this out. Last week, we did mention the awful event in Tulsa happened in 1921. Used to be called the Tulsa Race Riots, which totally belittles what actually happened on that day. The correct term for this event was the Tulsa Race Massacre. So I apologize for saying that wrong. I definitely want to get it right. It was officially changed in 2018, and actually the centennial for the event is coming up in May 31st, 2021. So,
wow.
Yeah, big part of Oklahoma history. And I was doing some research, and the Centennial Commission's project manager, who's on the board for the centennial event that'll be happening next year, he said, this is a quote from him, "It is imperative that we teach our children, and our children are able to teach even their parents and grandparents, the importance of changing the trajectory of the language." And I thought that was really good, because riots doesn't even begin to cover what happened that day. It's just another example of social conditioning that we need to fight against and overcome. So, again, I apologize for saying the incorrect name.
Yeah, and I did too. But I love how history kind of catches up and hopefully is righted. You know,
yes.
This is something that we talked about last week that for a long time wasn't even taught in Oklahoma.
Right.
So we're trying to catch up as much as we can.
Well, even the term riot, like, you know, the white newspapers of the day coined that riot. And if you're doing a riot to someone, you know, that's not what happened. What happened was they burned this entire community to the ground. So even just the description of riot makes no sense, because it wasn't the white person's story. It was the black person's story, and it was not a riot. So,
yeah. And Tulsa's, it's beautiful. I mean, it's just different enough from Oklahoma City, where it has its own identity. And so I feel like they're playing a bit of they're embracing the fact that for years, this has kind of been almost a hidden part of their history, which I really appreciate.
Definitely. I have a lot of family in Tulsa, and I only learned about it when I was about 10, just in passing from my great grandmother. And then I never heard about it again. It's not taught in schools or anything like that.
No, but I didn't know about it until like maybe a year ago from one of you guys.
Yeah. So we will eventually cover that story in detail, but just wanted to apologize and make sure we got the correct name, the Tulsa Race Massacre.
And speaking of correct names, I'm going to read the town of the week. Takamatsu Kagawa. We love you.
Oh, I've been there.
It's nice this time of year.
Well, yeah, last summer.
It's in bloom.
I've been there that one
time. It is
time.
In bloom. We love you. And Klitschy did download.
They came back.
Yeah, they came back. Last episode, we said
we
they hadn't come back.
We offended them too much, but they came back.
They're back.
I hope you stay with us, Klitschy.
What did we hear that
it's
pronounced?
Klitschy.
What does it say it again?
Klitschy.
Klitschy. Yeah. There's nothing cliche about Klitschy.
Bonjour.
Have you guys watched American Murder, The Family Next Door on Netflix?
Yes.
Yes.
I was the first one to watch it.
It was disgusting.
I watched it immediately when it came on that night.
When it was released?
Yes. And I didn't even realize that it was being released. I saw someone like posted it on Facebook, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to watch that, because it's so vivid in my memory that day of it of like them announcing that these precious babies and mother were missing, because I watched it live on the TV.
That's
I watched
so
his interview.
I remember you talking about it at work, because we were working together at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were keeping us posted on all the information.
You're like the neighbor in the documentary. You knew.
Immediately.
Right away.
Immediately. That's from my love of true crime right there. Just being able to pick up on the cues of how creepy he was being. I mean, if you just lost your pregnant wife, and your small two daughters are missing, you would be hysterical.
Yeah.
You were a mom already when this happened, right?
I think you were pregnant.
Or, I was pregnant, yeah. I think. Yeah.
So you were definitely feeling how you would have been feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you guys haven't watched it yet, you need to go watch it because it's very good.
If you think you're that slick to be able to do an interview and lie, I mean, at least be able to fake a lie detector test.
Let's stop giving murderers tips.
Again, call our attorney. 555.
Wild.
1, 2, 3, 4. Wild.
Yeah. 555. Wild.
Five,
the
five,
next
five,
caller two, gets three, a free stab. Sweatshirt.
I think watching that part, I don't know. I guess just knowing what he did and then watching that was just so hard.
It's sickening, literally, physically sickening to watch.
He's awful.
I mean, I don't want to give it away so everybody plug their ears or fast forward like 10 seconds, more than 10 seconds. It's not like you smothered your kid while they were sleeping. They were alive and you took them one by one and killed them. It's just so barbaric and evil.
With their mother dead at their feet in the back seat. Like, that is...
That's like a next level psychopath. I don't even know.
I mean, essentially he had no motive though, because the girlfriend thought he was separated and like getting a divorce.
She had no clue.
She didn't ask him to leave his family. She didn't ask him to murder anybody. She didn't really ask him any questions. And now he's screwed up her life as well because she just thought, oh, like he's just going to move on and we're going to be happy together. But instead he annihilated his family for literally no reason.
And I mean, not that there's a reason, but so he wanted to get rid of his wife. So get rid of your wife. I mean, not saying that's a good thing to do, but
do you mean through divorce?
Your kids don't know.
Yeah. Like leave the babies alone.
The babies would have been, you know, just they could have gone to their grandparents. They could, you know.
I think what probably happened is one of them saw either what he was doing to the mom or saw that the mom was not alive. And so he freaked out and was like, now, I mean, she can tell people, oh, mommy was hurt or something.
Yeah.
That's true.
He said the oldest one walked in.
Yeah. I think that he didn't know what to do other than get rid of, but just turn yourself in or try to flee. Just don't hurt the babies. Don't hurt anyone. Don't kill anyone. That's the moral of the story.
Yeah, we believe if you're 13 or older, you're fair game. But under that, it's bad,
again,
right?
555 wild to reach our attorneys.
555 wild. And you don't even need an area code, just nationally.
Just so you guys know, it's not okay to kill anyone or anything.
We do not glorify murder. That's not what our podcast is about.
I won't even kill a spider because I believe they kill termites, which are bad for your house.
Yeah, it's a chain.
I kill spiders. Sorry, PETA. But I do.
Oh, speaking of spiders, our friends told us about this new drag race contest. Well, it's actually not new, but it's 2 or 3 years old, where it's all like gore and horror. It's not only Halloween, but it's like a Halloween RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, like Halloween costume, makeup, that sort of thing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Like gore. Yeah, like gore and.
Wow.
Yeah, it's intense.
It's called Dragula.
And how you get kicked off, like whoever loses that week. They get fake murdered at the end. What? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a little mini film at the end of the show.
It's called Dragula.
Who knew? RuPaul loves true crime too.
Well, it's not his show though.
Oh.
It's a, yeah. Yeah.
Bummer.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can endorse it if he's not associated. Has anyone been watching The Vow on HBO?
No. I need to watch that.
Oh my gosh. If you like cults, I mean, if you're interested.
If you belong to a cult.
No. If
you
cults
live next
are interesting
to
you, learning about them, how people get entangled and try to flee them, all these things, go watch The Vow on HBO. It's really well made from perspective of people that escaped this crazy man and his cult. So it's very good.
And then start your own cult. We highly encourage that.
Yeah, learn all the tips. Again, 555 wild.
555 wild.
Y'all know that's like my thing. I love true crime, but I love learning about some cults.
They're fascinating.
So I really need to watch it.
Did you watch Waco on Netflix, Courtney?
Yes.
Oh, that was good.
It was really good. So sad.
I've watched all of the cults.
It has our girl stuff. Ruthie from Ozark.
Yeah.
And Tim Riggins. So hot.
It was good.
Not in that role, but normally in normal life, he's very attractive. Okay. My first murder is about Catherine Knight. Anybody?
Nobody.
Nope. Nobody?
Nobody.
Can you give me the spelling of that word?
Catherine with a K.
No, not familiar.
Okay. Catherine Knight is one of the most infamous killers from the land down under, Australia.
Like below the waist?
Yeah.
Good eye, mate.
Good eye, mate. I'm not even, I can't do it.
So this is a female killer.
Yes.
Ooh.
Our first female murderer. Catherine Mary Knight was born on October 24th, 1955 in New South Wales, Australia, which is like a little bit north of Sydney. Her mother, Barbara, had been married before to a man named Jack, I think it's Ruffin is my guess, and they had four sons together. Well, Barbara had an affair. She cheated on Jack with a man named Ken Knight. And Ken was Jack's friend and one of his co-workers at the slaughterhouse. That was the family business. They all worked at the slaughterhouse in town.
Yikes.
She had a lot of practice.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
So the town of Aberdeen, it's a small, rural, kind of country town. And the main industry is the slaughterhouse and the miners, like coal mining.
Can I say that's the most depressing town description I've ever heard?
Yeah.
Coal miner's daughter.
Yeah, exactly. Loretta Lynn. So when Barbara had an affair with Ken, they lived in the small town. So word was going everywhere. People were freaking out. It was this big scandal because they both came from, you know, pretty well-known families in the area. So they decided to up and move so they could be together without the drama. They moved to a town called, I'm going to say Moray. Sorry, Australia. None of her sons went with her. Two of them stayed with their dad, and then the two youngest went to live with an aunt in Sydney. So she kind of just like peaced out on her first fam. So Barbara had four more children with Ken, including Catherine Knight, who was a twin. She was the youngest of a set of twins. And what's interesting is her sister's name was Joy, which is ironic for the story that's about to come. So when Catherine was four, her mother's previous husband, Jack, that we just talked about, he died. And the two boys that had been living with him came to live with Barbara and Ken. So Ken Knight, Catherine's father, was a major alcoholic. He was also very abusive. He would actually rape Barbara, his wife, up to 10 times a day. And oh they would God. Do this in front of the children. Who's like it was no big that? Deal.
That's
like lunchtime.
That's the first thing that can't come to your mind.
Yeah, it really is. If you've got kids, like, don't they got stuff to chop up?
Don't they run a slaughterhouse?
I know.
Yeah, who's slaughtering the pigs? I assume goats.
They were on a break. I don't know.
There's no break when you own a slaughterhouse.
That's true. So Barbara would tell her daughters very intimate details of her sex life with Ken, which is like, what? You don't want to hear about that, especially when it's abuse. She would also talk about how much she hated men, always putting men down. So this is what Catherine grew up in and around. And when she was older, she was dating a guy who was wanting to do some sexual things. And Catherine wasn't comfortable with what he was wanting to do. So she went to her mom to talk about it. And her mom said, quote, put up with it and stop complaining.
Wow.
That's some motherly advice.
How many Mother of the Year awards did she win at that point in her life?
Every year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She had a dynasty at that point.
Maybe even like placed on national level?
Yeah.
So Catherine was frequently sexually and physically assaulted by different people in her family, but never by her dad. So she obviously wasn't close with any of her family members because they're not the greatest people. But she did become really close with an uncle. His name was Oscar Knight. But in 1969, he committed suicide. But even to this day, Catherine claims that his ghost continues to visit her on the reg. So the Knights moved back to Aberdeen, and Catherine went to Musselwell Brook High School. They said that she was very shy. She was a loner. She was really tall. She had bright red hair. She just kind of stood out a little bit. But she was also known for having a very sudden and very violent temper. So it was like a flip switch. And so she became a bully, and she would stand over the children that were smaller than her, which was most of the children. And they said that she assaulted at least one boy at school with a weapon. And at one point, she was injured by a teacher, but when they investigated it, they found out that the teacher was actually acting in self-defense.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah.
She only had an eraser to defend herself and some chalk.
So when Catherine wasn't mad, though, she was a model student, and she even earned awards for her good behavior. So when she was 15, she left school. She didn't know how to read or write, so she got a job as a cutter in a clothing factory. But a year later, she landed her dream job. What do you think
her dream? Slaughterhouse.
Oh, you guessed it. She was cutting up the offal at the local slaughterhouse.
The offal?
And let me tell you what offal is.
Yeah. Can you please?
It's pretty awful. So offal is the entrails and internal organs of an animal used as food. That was her job. That was her dream job.
I don't even know what that means.
She's quoted as saying that's her dream job?
Yes. So her family did have like a long line of working in slaughterhouses, but I think most little girls growing up have different dreams for the most part.
She's probably thinking about all those times she was raped and she's like, chop, chop.
So Catherine was quickly promoted to boning, which is where she was.
I think we all know what boning means, Bethany. We're all adults here. You don't have to explain it.
No, she was a meat slicer, so she would cut the meat off of the bone.
That's what I heard.
So when she got this position, she was very proud, and they gave her her own set of butcher knives, which she just loved and were like her most prized possession.
Question.
Yeah.
Were you having to bring your own butcher knives?
I bet that they had, maybe they had, you know, stuff at the shop that she could pick from, but now was, she had her own personal, these are my set.
Gotcha.
I wonder if they were Cutco.
Is Cutco a good brand?
I don't know any knife brands.
I also have another question. Is anybody else seeing this as a red flag?
Right? I mean, foreshadowing a little bit is happening. So she loved her knives so much.
Why do you hate butchers, Courtney?
I'm sorry. A woman who is loving to chop up meat.
Hey, I like sardines.
And not just meat, but the internal organs and entrails.
And loves her knives.
Yeah.
So she loved her knives so much that she hung them over her bed for the rest of her life. And she would say she wanted them there because, quote, they're always handy if I need them.
I've switched positions. Okay. I've switched positions. I'm with Courtney.
Sounds legit.
Yeah. She's just proud of her profession. So in 1973, Catherine met David Stanford Kellett. And there's a picture if you want to go look on our Instagram or on our website. He was a coworker of hers at the slaughterhouse. And he was also a very hard drinker. He had witnessed his best friend be killed. And he had also witnessed a train hit a school bus and killed some children. Oh, and he had to like assist in the rescue effort. So in order to cope with all of these things, he just turned to alcohol and became a pretty heavy alcoholic. So David started dating Catherine, but he would also occasionally date her twin sister, like, you know, casual.
Awkward.
Yeah.
On purpose, or did he not know the twins?
Keeping it in the
on
family.
On purpose. So David and Catherine ended up getting married in 1974. They arrived to the service on Catherine's motorcycle, which David drove even though he was so drunk he had been drinking for 2 days straight. At the wedding, Catherine's mother, Barbara, who we talked about earlier, she came up to David and she said, quote, this is crazy, quote, you better watch this one or she'll fucking kill you. Stir her up the wrong way or do the wrong thing and you're fucked. Don't ever think of playing up on her. She'll fucking kill you. And David said, she told me she's got something loose. She's got a screw loose somewhere. So happy wedding.
I'm going to start using play up.
Play
Jordan,
up.
Don't you play up on me.
Don't you play up on her.
Can we say yay for a great mother-in-law? Like, I don't know. She was trying.
Yeah, she was.
Trying to warn him. On their wedding night, they did the deed 3 times. Well, Catherine was very mad because her mother had told her that she had sex 5 times on her wedding night. But David fell asleep after only 3 times. So, naturally, she decided to strangle him.
It's legit.
Yeah. She didn't kill him. He woke up and, like, fought her off. But she just was like, you know what? I wanted 5. You only gave me 3. I'm going to strangle you.
It woke him up. So it worked.
I can relate.
Oh, no. This isn't going so well.
No.
Jordan, my mom's listening.
So in May 1976, Catherine and David had a baby. Because, you know, bring a baby into the situation.
Really?
Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
This is scripted.
This is the crazy, I mean, this is a crazy story. It's very unbelievable, but it's all true. So 6 weeks after they had the baby, Catherine and David got into a fight. So naturally, she tried to stab him with a broken beer bottle.
She didn't pick her knives hanging above the bed.
They were too precious to her.
They were she said they're there. She needs them.
Maybe they were in the backyard drinking a beer and she just goes, psh,
maybe.
And, you know. So eventually, David just couldn't deal with the abuse anymore. And like we were saying earlier, she dated men who were rough and tough guys, but they were typically shorter than her, so she could kind of beat up on them, even though they were like macho men. So he just couldn't deal with the abuse anymore, and he left his family with his new girlfriend and went to Queensland. So in July 1976, Catherine was seen violently pushing her baby in a stroller down the main street. She was throwing it from side to side, and people were concerned that she was just going to toss it into traffic.
Yeah, not okay.
Yeah. So Catherine was admitted to St. Elmo's Hospital, where she was diagnosed with postnatal depression. She spent several weeks in the hospital.
I just want to say, I had postnatal depression and anxiety, and like, no. She got other things going on.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot more than just postnatal depression. So when Catherine was released from the hospital, she put her then 12-week-old baby on the railway tracks shortly before the train was scheduled to arrive. She then went to a house nearby and stole an axe and started swinging it around and threatening to kill all the people that were around her.
Jeez.
Yeah. So a man who was foraging, he's just living his best life, foraging near the train. He saw the baby, went and got her just like a minute or two before the train came.
Praise for good people.
Yeah. So Catherine was arrested and taken back to the hospital, but naturally she signed herself out the same day because she thought she was all good.
That shouldn't be a thing. That's not a thing anymore.
Well, that's nice. You think you're all good. But, you know, for the other people who had an axe swung at their heads, they probably think otherwise.
Right.
I think she's good, in my expert opinion.
So less than 24 hours later, Catherine went to her neighbor's house, and she was asking the woman to drive her and her baby to the hospital because Catherine was saying that her baby was sick. So the woman agrees to do this. She packs up all of her kids and drives down to Catherine's to pick her up. The woman's daughter went inside to help Catherine get her baby, but Catherine produced a knife and started chasing the girl out of the house.
What the heck?
Yeah.
She's nuts.
Yeah, this is crazy. We're not even halfway there. She ends up slashing the girl's face and then decided to take the family hostage.
What is happening?
So she demanded that the family drive her to her mother-in-law's house, David's mom, because she wanted to kill her. She then wanted them to take her to Queensland to find David because she's pissed that he had run off with this girlfriend. The family convinced her that they needed to stop for gas at a service station. And when they got there, they were able to basically get away from her and lock themselves inside an office in the service station. Well, Catherine just ripped off a metal blade from a tractor hitch mower and started hacking at the door to the office.
What?
I know. She's got like brute force. I'm
like, gross. This can is I just say, creepy.
If I'm in a foxhole, I want her on my team.
Right. You don't want to make Catherine mad. She's hacking away at the door and she sees one of the mechanics has a crutch because he only has one leg.
That poor guy, he's dead.
I know. No, she takes his crutch. She doesn't stab him. She just takes his crutch, starts swinging it around, smashing everything she possibly can. And eventually she breaks into the office. So then she takes one of the little boys hostage with a knife. So it's around this time that the police arrive and they convince her to free the little boy. Then this is just adds to the craziness of the story. The police came at her with brooms.
Naturally.
Because they're trying to keep her at arm's length.
Sorry. You know, what?
Just to think this is all because she didn't want to pay at the pump.
I don't blame her. So what kind of like push brooms, yeah, witches brooms?
What is that?
You know, I'm not totally sure on the make and model, but
make and model, that's good.
Like who was like passing out brooms? Here, take a broom, take a broom, take a broom. Protect yourself with this from the crazy lady.
So they're coming at her with brooms. They don't want to get too close. She has this knife metal thing that she ripped off a tractor just Jeez. With her bare hands.
Well, to their credit, they probably didn't know who this was.
Freaking no, they idiot. Did. It's like a small town.
Well, then they're just dumb. Okay, there we go.
Mosley. Molly Weasley coming at you.
Who's that?
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Harry Potter.
Oh.
Jeez. Well, we lost the Harry Potter Uh-oh. Crowd.
I'm right. sorry, guys. They all like Harry Potter. Don't leave
something
us.
Something that I know that you don't? Wow.
That's a
Maybe
first.
Maybe Bethany is the basic on the team.
No,
that's not true.
So the police are coming at her with brooms, and eventually she just collapses because she just literally runs out of gas. She's like
at exhausted. A gas station. Irony.
I don't get it. Come here, little Ginge. Let's scoot you right out. Come on.
Hey, go, I take going, offense go. To that. Don't say Ginge.
Ginge? You owe everyone an apology.
Anyway, her rage just, she had just exerted all this emotion taking this family hostage, that it just ran out and she collapses. So she was admitted to a psychiatric hospital, but she wasn't charged with anything criminal for all the things that she just did to this family and at the service station.
Sounds like freaking Mr. Wilder.
Yeah, just off the hook. Go back to episode 2.
That was a, what'd you say?
Did you call him Mr. Wilder?
Mr. Wilder?
He doesn't deserve to be called Mr. He
doesn't deserve a Mr.
It's called a plug too, Courtney.
That's what I just said. It's a plug. Go back and listen to episode 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Or 7. If you're in the future.
Right, just go weeks. Listen to the intro. You know.
Download everything. So naturally, when David heard about all of this happening, he left his pregnant girlfriend and came back to Aberdeen to be with Catherine.
Wait, so his girlfriend's also pregnant?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So Catherine was at her mom's house when David got to town and he comes to pick her up. Catherine's mother, Barbara, blames David for her breakdown. So she comes outside. David's sitting in the car behind the wheel. She reaches in through the window and starts strangling him. Catherine sees this, comes outside, punches her mother in the face. She knocks her out to the ground, and then she leaves with David and their baby, and they move to another town. So really great family dynamic. Yeah,
very loving and wonderful.
Honestly, I want to go to their Thanksgiving.
Whatever issues you think your family has,
yeah.
This one-up show.
So David, Catherine, and their baby move to Woodbridge, where Catherine gets a job at another slaughterhouse called the Denmore Meatworks.
Also a gay bar in Chicago.
Really?
I don't know.
I believe everything Chad says.
That's a very risky way to navigate through life.
So in 1979, David gets home late one night because he was at the bar at a dart tournament. And he ends up making it to the finals. So he's like, I'm going to be late, but I want to win this tournament. So when he gets home, Catherine, who was very pregnant, had burned all of his clothes and shoes and then hits him in the back of his head with a frying pan. So David was afraid for his life. He runs outside and collapses in the neighbor's yard, has to be treated for a severely fractured skull. But somehow Catherine talks him out of making any charges. I mean, is that what you do, Courtney, when Ben's
late? Wife of the year.
Late?
No. Again, we're not giving tips to murderers either. Don't use a frying pan. That's intense.
So bad. So in 1980, David and Catherine had their second daughter. And during this time, David was a truck driver, so he was gone a lot. And Catherine would get more and more paranoid that he was cheating on her while he was away. So in 1984, she, because it's her decision, she leaves David. She lets him go, and she moves back to Aberdeen.
He's saying, thank you, Jesus.
He's like, praise God, I survived. So in 1986, Catherine meets another David. His name is David Saunders. And he and his dingo puppy move in with Catherine and her little girls.
Dingo I know. Puppy.
So cute.
Did it steal her baby?
Oh, my gosh.
Did that dingo really steal her baby, or was that, did they find out that was true?
It's a theory.
It's a theory.
I don't think we really know for sure. That's a crazy story. Maybe we'll talk about that one day.
Maybe that is the dingo. We don't know.
No, it's not, sadly. So even though he moved in with them, he still kept his old apartment. And so then this made Catherine suspicious of him. Like, what are you doing when you're not here? But they would fight so much that she would throw him out. So he just needed a place to go sometimes. Well, one night, he also got home late, and we know that Catherine doesn't receive this information well. She was so furious that she hit him in the face with a hot, steaming iron. Casual.
Why doesn't someone just knock her the fuck out? Like, who are these people?
Jordan's face, it just reeks of, I'm disgusted.
What, is she Wonder Woman?
Like, so all of the men said she was the best sexual partner they have ever had in their entire lives. And that's literally what kept them coming back.
That must have been some hoo-ha.
So one night they're fighting and David tries to leave Catherine. This is kind of hard to hear. So warning to our listeners. So she goes into the backyard, gets his puppy, and cuts its throat in front of him.
Oh my God.
Can we stop? Like, no.
I know. So she then goes to her sister's house with a shotgun and tells her sister that she killed David, even though she hadn't. So two reasons why she does this. One is for the shock value, because she thought it was funny.
Oh, hilarious.
This girl is next level.
Yeah, we're still going.
I love how you've talked about her abusing five people, and we're all like,
when does the murder come?
And no. And then you talked about a dog, and we all went, oh, yeah, bitch.
Well, dog can't do anything.
I know.
And the second was because she was actually planning his death, and she wanted to rehearse what people's reaction would be when she told them.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
She's a regular Shakespeare. Well, Shakespeare wasn't an actor, right?
He's a writer, but we get what you mean. Mm-hmm. So David left Catherine this night, and what she did was she overdosed on pills, and that got him to come back to her because he felt bad and kind of got sucked back into it. So in June 1988, Catherine and David had a baby, and they bought a house, which Catherine decorated with pitchforks, rakes, machetes, old boots, leather jackets, rusty animal traps, horns, skulls, animal skins, and taxidermy. And it said that there was no space on the walls at all, including the ceilings.
She has incredible taste.
I feel like that was Rejuvenation 1989.
I think she just overdid it with the boots.
Yeah, she had me to the boots.
So she would decorate all of her houses this way moving forward. So eventually David, he's had his fill at this point, but he's terrified of her. So he takes off from work and he tells her that he's going to go visit a friend in another town. But what he actually does is he goes into hiding so Catherine can't find him. And she couldn't find him.
Run, girl. Change your hair. Change your name. Change your skin.
Your favorite beer.
Become a different nationality.
I love that.
She even tells their daughter that David has died, even though he didn't. He's just in hiding from the family.
David is dead inside. We know that for sure. Yeah.
So in 1990, Catherine gets pregnant again, but with a former slaughterhouse coworker named John Chillingworth.
She has to stop having them babies.
I know. It's kind of like how she kind of hooks the guys to stick around and put up with the abuse.
She got that Wonder Womb.
Oh my God, I love that. Can we trademark that?
TM. So they had a son together, and John was actually the first guy that was physically bigger than Catherine, so she wasn't really able to be as physically abusive to him, but she was mentally abusive. What?
We're still laughing at Wonder Womb. What it means is, Bethany, she has a great womb.
I know what to have means. Children.
She's
very fertile.
So John was the first man that was actually physically larger than Catherine, and so she wasn't able to be as physically abusive to him, but she was very mentally abusive. She would stand at the foot of their bed and stare at him while they were sleeping until he would wake up, and she would say something like, "This is so you know, I can wait till you're asleep and do anything I like."
What the fuck?
Whatever, like, you do that to me three I'm times sorry.
Every night. So after 3 years of being with John Chillingworth, Catherine left him for a man she met at a club named John Price.
There's I have been waiting for John Pricey.
Pricey. John Charles Thomas Price, who went by Pricey.
Okay, so far we've gone through two Davids. Now we're on our second John.
Yeah.
All right.
He likes Davids and Johns. Yeah.
Okay.
Dear John.
So Pricey had three children, and by all accounts, everyone loved him. The town, everyone thought very highly of him. They said he was, quote, a terrific bloke. And his youngest daughter lived with his former wife, but his two oldest lived with him. So he was, you know, a really active dad in his children's lives.
Did you pick this photo on purpose for some reason that I want to point out?
No.
This picture is foreshadowing so strongly. He is drinking a beer in a koozie that says something about a bloody argument. Did you even catch that?
I didn't, actually.
That's what it says, a bloody argument.
Oh, I didn't do that on purpose at all. Interesting. So his children reportedly liked Catherine at first, but then when Catherine and Pricey's relationship started turning violent, obviously they changed their minds. They said in interviews that Catherine told them she had been abducted by aliens. And one time Catherine was so upset with Pricey that she told his daughter Pricey wasn't her real dad, even though he was. I've had some real crazy step people in my life, but she takes it to another level.
There were no aliens involved for you.
Not for me.
Right.
That I'm aware of. Some of them seem like there might have been.
They could have been the aliens.
That's true. So after 18 months, Catherine really wanted to marry Pricey, but he reportedly told her that he was only in their relationship for sex, which we all know all these men were all about having sex with her. So Catherine stole some of Pricey's money and bought herself a ring, because that's what any girl would do. So when he found out about the ring, he basically was like, whatever, it'll keep her happy, but we are not getting married. Catherine didn't live with Pricey, but she would treat his house like it was her own. And one time she found his will and saw that he was leaving everything to his ex-wife and children, which infuriated her. So she demanded that he give her $10,000 for her to leave. When he refused this, Catherine filmed an out-of-date first aid kit that Pricey had gotten out of the trash from work, sent the film to his boss, who then had to fire Pricey after working for this company for 17 years, and he also lost his pension.
Jeez. I mean, that's like shooting yourself in the foot, though, because you're still married to him, and now...
They're not married.
Not married.
Oh, well... Did they break up then?
No.
Well, then you're still shooting yourself.
Yes, they did. Sorry. When he wouldn't give her $10,000. Okay. They're having a fight, basically. But a few months after this, they start dating again.
Exactly.
The cycle continues.
Exactly.
She's got that something.
Like I said, everyone loved Pricey. He was a great, terrific bloke. He asked this guy to set up a bouncy castle in the neighborhood for the kids just to be an awesome neighbor. Well, Catherine got so drunk this night that she accused Pricey's kids of abusing her kids. Pricey's daughter had had her fill and was so mad that she literally kicked Catherine off the front porch of the house. I'm like, yeah, go you.
But it backfires because I forgot there's another house there, a bouncy house.
She just bounces off.
Try to kick me off this porch.
Oh my God, this porch, the bouncy porch.
Catherine and Pricey's arguments escalated, and she even stabbed Pricey in the chest with a knife. She also made a voodoo doll of Pricey.
As you would.
Yeah. So on February 27th, 2000, they had a fight, and Catherine threatened Pricey with a knife. He left and went to one of his friend's house, but he came home the next day, and the police were there with a restraining order against him, because Catherine had gone to the police and accused Pricey of being the violent one. The next night at 2 a.m., Pricey woke up to Catherine's once again standing at the foot of his bed. She didn't have a weapon, but it totally freaked him out, and she wouldn't leave his house.
She had coronavirus, and she was like, I will cough on you, you son of a bitch.
No mask.
She's got no mask on, too. Psychopath.
Yeah. So on February 29th, the next day, Pricey took out a restraining order, but they told him that he'd have to wait 3 weeks to go to court. That same day, he told his coworkers that if he didn't come to work the next morning, she had killed him. His friends were like, just don't go home. We're worried, like, we're very concerned. But he was afraid that if he didn't go home, she would hurt his kids instead. So that evening, he goes to his neighbor's house and he hangs out there till about 11 o'clock and then goes home. Earlier that day, Catherine had bought black lingerie, apparently from the thrift store, because
gross.
Fancy. She also had spent some of the day with her children, and she was videotaping them all as they were hanging out while she was making comments that have since been interpreted as like a last will and testament. So she's like casually like, oh, and I have this, blah, 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 and I own this, blah, blah.
It was the first Facebook Live. Mm-hmm.
So Catherine gets to Pricey's house at 11:30, and Pricey was already asleep. She watched Star Trek on TV and then took a shower.
Jeez. Oh, the old Star Trek and shower move.
It's like Netflix and chill. The old version of Netflix.
It was the 80s version.
So after her shower, she woke up Pricey and they had sex.
I knew it. The Star Trek and shower move works every time.
It's where the nasty black lingerie. Don't buy lingerie from the thrift store, y'all. Don't send your lingerie to the thrift store.
Yeah.
Throw it in the trash.
Throw it in the trash.
Recycle it. So at 6 a.m. the next day, Pricey's neighbor wakes up and he sees that Pricey's car is still in the driveway, which concerns him because Pricey is always gone by the time the neighbor wakes up. When Pricey didn't show up for work, his boss sent a worker over to check on him. So the neighbor and this coworker are like trying to get into the house, and they notice that there's blood on the door. So they call police, and the police arrive at 8 a.m. and they break down the back door. Police enter the house and they sadly find Pricey's body. Catherine had stabbed him with a butcher's knife. And they also found Catherine comatose on the bed from taking a large number of pills. So she's like passed out. She's not dead, but just passed out.
Oh, thank God. She's not dead.
So according to blood evidence, Catherine stabbed Pricey in the chest, but missed his heart. So he like gets up out of the bed. He tried to turn on the light. Then he is running through the house while she's chasing him with the butcher's knife. He managed to open the front door, but he either stumbled back in or she pulled him back in. And he fell in the foyer hallway, which is where he died from bleeding out. Pricey's autopsy revealed that he had been stabbed at least 37 times.
Jeez.
I just don't even know. I'm like, I'm trying to process all of this. That's a lot. Overkill.
That's a lot. So later that night, Catherine went into town and withdrew $1,000 from Pricey's account. And no one even still knows what happened to this $1,000. Just kind of went missing. She then took her car back to her house and parked it in her backyard.
She probably went on a shopping spree for rakes and, you know, pitchforks, yeah. Good pair of boots.
I bet she got some new lingerie. My money's on.
Okay, so now I'm going to get into the details of what happened on that night. This is very graphic, so I'm warning all listeners, if you're at all sensitive, you might want to skip a few minutes.
I got to take a breather. I'm just... Who's that?
Okay, so we're going to talk about the details of what Catherine did that night. And this is a warning. This is very graphic. If you're at all sensitive, you're going to want to skip this part. So hours after Pricey died, Catherine channeled her inner butcher and she skinned him and hung the skin from a meat hook that was hanging in the doorway.
Okay, this is the Australian version of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes. The police who first entered the house, they initially thought it was like a curtain or a blanket. His skin had come off in one piece. It looked like a wetsuit.
What?
Ew.
What?
Because she was so skilled with her knives.
Why is there just a meat hook hanging in the hallway, too?
Because she's a butcher. She's that's a slaughterhouse true. Worker.
Out of all the things that have happened in this.
That's hanging you up.
That's the one thing that you're
all been hanging me up, but I'm trying to not really like think about this.
So I watched this documentary and they are interviewing the police who first entered the house and it didn't even register in their brains like what they were seeing. They really literally thought it was like a curtain. So the officer reached out to push it to the side.
Oh no.
And he felt wetness on his arm. So he looked and saw blood. Well, he thought he had injured himself when they broke the door down. But then it's like their brain starts to really realize what is in front of them. And they realize that it's a Pricey skin.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
So it was moist.
Oh, Chad.
Yep, I went there.
So after Catherine skins Pricey, she then decapitated him. And cooked parts of his body.
I'm really having a hard time. I'm having a hard time with this.
This is a heavy one.
Now we're at Silence of the Lambs.
It's safe to say world. She's crazy, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not there yet.
So she served the meat with baked potatoes, pumpkin, beetroot, zucchini.
I'm there. I have
cabbage,
arrived.
Yellow squash, and a side of gravy.
She was like, here, I'm going to make a gourmet meal.
Exactly.
Paula Deen would be proud. I hope she used butter.
They didn't list butter, so she skipped that step. Mm. She places it on two settings and sets the dinner table. Beside each plate was a note that had Pricey's children's names on it. Oh, the notes God. Basically told them that if she couldn't have him, no one could. So she was planning to serve Pricey's meat to his children.
Which is a lie. She said nobody could have him. They could. They could have eaten him. You know what I mean?
That's dark.
Ugh.
Oh, I'm the dark one? You're the one who picked the story, Bethany. 555 Wild.
Courtney's looking down at the desk.
I'm literally struggling with this.
I think we've lost Courtney.
I'm literally struggling.
So a third meal was also thrown in the backyard, and the police speculate that it was for the dog. Police also found a warm pot on the stove, which contained vegetables and John's head. Catherine then took Pricey's body and sat it in his favorite chair.
Well, that was nice.
Stupid.
Let me guess, to watch Star Trek?
I mean, at least it was his favorite chair. I'm sorry.
I mean, brother can't even watch Star Trek because she took his head.
Oh, this is great.
That's the real fucked up part.
Okay, this is fantastic.
Can't even watch TV.
All I can think about is this, it's not even a body at this point, so.
Yeah.
Courtney's gonna pass
I'm
out.
I'm literally.
Courtney's white as a ghost. So she crossed his legs and propped his arm on a bottle of lemon soda squash. The lead investigator on this case suffered a nervous breakdown, clearly, because the scene was so horrendous. Several of the officers that
were also...
What's
his name? Courtney Klein.
I would have been done after this. I would have walked in the house, turned around, walked out the house, and said, "I resign."
No,
going home.
Several of the police officers left the police force after working this case.
Oh my god!
Because it was so traumatizing. Surprised. Yeah, Catherine. As I said earlier, they found her comatose on the bed because she had overdosed on several pills. She had to be hospitalized for a few days. They pumped her stomach, and she was fine. So police interview her 5 days after the murder, and she said she had no memory of the night. She also, again, claimed that Pricey was the violent one in the relationship.
I don't know. He's just sitting there watching TV. He looks pretty peaceful to me.
Yeah. His head has never done anything to anybody.
Well, I'm like, how can you still claim he's the violent one when you just freaking skinned him?
Oh, I know how.
Cut his head off.
That torso beat me up.
Catherine tried to plead that she was insane, but according to her own brother, she had told him 3 weeks before the murder that she was going to kill Pricey and get away with it. And she was going to do it in a way that would make her look so crazy that she could plead insanity in a trial.
I don't know Australian law. I don't know American law. She's crazy, right? But if you plan it out, you can't plead that you're crazy?
Correct. If you know the difference between right and wrong and you understand what you're doing, then you are sane.
Think about it. You're smart enough to plan it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Catherine initially offered to plead guilty to manslaughter, which is extremely rude, but that was rejected. In 2001, she entered a plea of not guilty on the charge of murdering Pricey. When the trial started, Justice Barry O'Keefe, he offered to the group of 60 potential jurors, he offered that they could leave if they wanted to because the photographic evidence was so intense. So he was like, hey, before we even get started with picking you guys, if you want to leave, you can, which is unusual. 5 of them accepted and left, didn't even enter the process.
That would have been me. Bye.
I knew you were going to say that.
Catherine was ordered to have a psychiatric assessment done because her attorneys were planning to defend her by claiming amnesia and disassociation. So 3 psychiatrists concluded that while Catherine did have borderline personality disorder, she was completely sane. After this, Catherine changed her plea to guilty, and so the jury was dismissed. At the sentencing, Catherine's attorneys requested that she be excused so she wouldn't have to hear all the terrible facts of the things that she did. Like, are you kidding me?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No.
I love the analysis, Courtney, that you just provided to us.
It's like I have so much to say and nothing to say at the same time.
You're
like
speechless.
I just am speechless.
Luckily, the request was denied because you gotta face what you did to this human being.
Good.
Yeah. So when the process of what she had done started being described, they said that Catherine became totally hysterical and she had to be sedated. So some people think that this was all a show, like it was all an act.
I'm with them.
Yeah, I think 100%. I think so, too. Justice O'Keefe sentenced Catherine Knight to life imprisonment and ordered her papers be marked, quote, never to be released. This is the first time a woman in Australia has ever been given life without the possibility of parole.
Wow.
In June 2006, Catherine had the audacity to appeal the life sentence, claiming it was too severe for the killing. The appeal was dismissed, and Justice McClellan wrote in his judgment, quote, this was an appalling crime, almost beyond contemplation in a civilized society. So someone gets it.
I'm with him.
Yeah.
I'm still struggling over here. I'm like, I'm still hung up.
The analysis that you're providing, Courtney, in this case is like CNN level.
I know.
So today, Catherine is known as the Nana in prison.
Because she's a caring grandmother now.
Yeah.
Barf.
She's not a caring grandmother, is she?
She reportedly is a mediator among inmates. And when there is an argument, she always finds nonviolent solutions.
Yeah, because she just points at a machete behind her and they're like, okay, we're good.
That gets to my next point. She has never been violent in prison, but this is because everyone knew what she had done and she basically became the prison boss instantly as soon as she arrived.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because if you piss her off, she's going to stand at the end of your cot in the middle of the night.
Look, I'm scared of her and I'm not even in the same country.
I know. Same. Her job in the prison is to make headphones. Which we're all wearing.
Which we're wearing. Do you think these are her models?
I hope not. God,
there's a little blood in the middle.
Oh, Lord.
Sealed in there.
Ugh. I wouldn't put her in charge of making anything. Because you know she can make a shank out of anything.
Oh, yeah.
She makes headphones. She has 4 armed guards with her at all times. And she has her own cell because they're protecting everyone else. She's not allowed to have a cellmate. She is the prison's event planner and reportedly always makes sure everyone is included.
No, they go because they don't want to get stabbed by her. Can you imagine, like, Easter egg hunt?
You don't show up for the party.
They're like, oh, it's the Easter egg hunt. Great.
Catherine has said that she has never been as happy as she is in prison.
I don't think she was ever happy anywhere before this.
I don't think so either. But it kind of makes me mad because it's like she's enjoying her punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And she should be suffering her life. Yes.
We mentioned this last episode. Kangaroos. Put her in a room full of kangaroos.
Let them punch her out.
Yeah, she's done. Out. I'm really pro kangaroo.
So that is the story of the murderess, Catherine Knight.
And I feel like murderess is very proper.
Mm. That was a crazy story. I'm going to do some research on that. I want to know more.
Head to our show notes. You can find links to some documentaries that I watched and do more deep dives if you want.
The brooms part I thought was going to be the most crazy part.
Oh, no.
And then you're like,
it just kept escalating.
She interior decorated with his body.
Yeah. Whole nother level. So we went deep and dark on this episode. Chad, give us a lighter, wild story.
Yeah. My story also involves someone's head getting chopped off.
Oh, no.
It doesn't. It doesn't involve that at all. I am going to do the story about how the cherished pastime of trick-or-treating came to be in North America.
Yay.
But before I start, I have a question for all three of you.
Okay.
What is your favorite costume you've ever gone as a child and as an adult? Mm. Jordan.
Mm. One time in the 7th or 8th grade, my dad took me to a costume rental place in Stillwater. And I rented this really cool Dracula costume. And that was my favorite childhood costume.
Did you go trick-or-treating in the 8th grade?
No, I couldn't remember what it was for. I forgot. I had a Halloween party at my house. As an adult, I don't know. One time a group of friends and I all went as the 7 Deadly Sins and I was Wrath. It was a pretty fun costume. I mean, that was like mostly naked. There was like a piece of Hobby Lobby fabric covering my body.
Ooh, I think I'm going to go this year as the woman from your story.
Catherine Knight.
I'm going as Catherine Knight this year.
Yeah.
What about you, Bethany?
My favorite one as an adult would have to be Winifred.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was a great costume.
You won costume of the year at our Halloween party.
I did.
Party.
I got the little trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a redhead and it was fun.
What year was that? 17, I think? 18?
I think it 17. Was 17. Really?
Yeah, I think it was 17.
Whoa, crazy.
Yeah.
And as a kid, probably Jasmine from Aladdin. My sisters and I loved it. When they grew into it, they wore it too. So.
Oh, that's fresh. You were a Starbucks barista, weren't you, Courtney?
I have never been a Starbucks barista. Or a Target employee, but maybe this year.
You should.
Oh, that would be good.
My childhood one would be Dorothy, because I went as Dorothy and we had a little dog. So I literally carried our little dog in a basket.
Oh, my God.
And my brothers were the Scarecrow and the Tin Man.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh.
I was maybe like 6 or 7 when we did that. And then my adult one would probably be last year's when I went as the queen bee, Letty went as a bumblebee, and Ben went as the beekeeper.
Cute.
Oh, that's so precious.
Yeah.
Mine would be as a child. I remember going as, you know how there's the Transformers?
Mm-hmm.
There was the knockoff GoBots.
Oh.
And I like the GoBots more, so I went as a GoBot. I don't remember which one, though. But in Michigan, it was always so cold that basically your costume was a mask and a coat and a jacket because everything was covered
up. It was hidden.
And then I would say as an adult, it was 2 years ago when we went to New Orleans and I went as a pregnant handmaid.
That was good.
Yeah. And I loved it because people, you couldn't even get into a bar because people would stop me and take pictures, which of course I loved. I was like living for it.
And that was like when Handmaid's Tale was new too. So
yeah.
Like cutting edge.
So I loved that. So, cause I like attention. Let's not kill ourselves.
Yeah, so maybe we should post some of our Halloween costumes on our Instagram.
Oh, we should.
We'll do that for you guys.
I actually loved my costume last year at New Orleans when I went as a wolf.
It was good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was good. Oh, Halloween.
It's my coming. Favorite.
I love Halloween. Well, apparently Americans Love Halloween. Great segue. So here we go. In the United States, we spend about $9 billion annually on Halloween.
Wow.
Yeah. I almost said each year, but that's what annually means. A lot of that money is from costumes and candy purchased for trick-or-treating. In fact, about $2.6 billion of that is on candy. We love our candy in the United States. But trick-or-treating, the highlight for many of Halloween, has only become popular over the last 60 years or so, which I did not know. And the story behind how we give candy to children on October 31st isn't as innocent as you'd all think. And to be honest, I had no idea about any of this and started looking. I just wanted to do some kind of Halloween story because Halloween's my favorite holiday. So before I get into the meat of the story, here's a quick background on Halloween and how it came to North America. So Halloween has its roots in the pre-Christian Celtic festival of Samhain, which was celebrated on the night of October 31st to usher in the dark half of the year. Celts. They lived 2,000 years ago in the area that is now Ireland, the UK, and northern France, believed that the dead returned to Earth. And on that sacred night, people sometimes dressed up as spirits to elude evil demons. They also gathered to light bonfires, they offered sacrifices, and they paid homage to the dead. So basically, it started off as kind of a serious night because they were scared. They were afraid. You know, we see a lot of pumpkins, also known as jack-o'-lanterns for those who are fancy, and we put them on our porch. Well, one of the reasons that started this ritual, it's an English ritual called perambulation, and it marked land boundaries. So people used to put pumpkins to mark where their land started.
Interesting.
So we put it on our porch, not to mark where our lands are, but it's basically your property, which I thought was interesting.
That is interesting. I didn't know that.
I know. This is a history podcast now. So when immigrants from Scotland and Ireland, Jordan, you're part Scottish, aren't you?
I am.
I do have Scottish in me.
You do too.
Mm-hmm. And Irish.
We don't, do we, Courtney?
And Irish no and idea French. What
any land that the redheads hail.
Wow. You're like Mr. Halloween, Jordan. All your people.
I'm just all over Europe.
Wow. So when immigrants from Scotland and Ireland bring their Halloween traditions to the United States in the middle of the 1800s, they celebrate Halloween back how they did in their homelands. And it's not with children going door to door for sweets, but by pulling pranks. So here we go. Across the American countryside in the later part of the 1800s, common Halloween tricks at this time included placing farmers' wagons and livestock stock on barn roofs, which that takes some muscle. Gosh. Yeah, uprooting vegetables in backyard gardens. Those are like for the week.
Nice.
Yeah, like your older brother's like putting wagons on the roof, and you're like, I pulled a carrot.
I'm gonna pull up the garden.
And they also tipped over outhouses, whether they were occupied or not, which is totally gross. No. In some regions, gates were taken off of their hinges to allow livestock to escape. So in some parts of the country, Halloween was known as gate night. The advent of the automobile delivered further opportunities for mischief. Mischief?
Mischief.
It's a female police officer. Such as removing manhole covers from streets, deflating tires, and erecting fake detour signs. I'd be so pissed.
I'm like trying to kill these people.
I know. No, seriously. It just escalates. So it gets so bad that, for example, the Cook County Herald newspaper of Illinois in 1902 encourages residents to literally shoot children.
What?
Yeah, they say, quote, "Most everybody enjoys a joke or fun to a proper degree on suitable occasions. But when property is damaged or destroyed, it is time to call a halt. We would advise the public to load their muskets or cannon." I don't know who has cannons just laying around. "With rock, salt, or birdshot. And when trespassers invade your premises at unseemly hours upon..." Oh God, here's that word again. Mischief. "Mischief bent. Pepper them good and proper so they will be effectually cured and have no further taste for such tricks."
Oh my gosh.
Oh, it's getting serious. "This problem and really poorly thought out solution of shooting kids spread, so it catches on. For example, when pranksters in Tucson, Arizona, stretched a wire across a sidewalk to trip passersby." People are real dicks in the early 1900s. Seriously. "When they do this in 1907, one pedestrian thrown to the ground, he draws a revolver and shoots one of the jokesters dead."
Wow.
I know. That same year,
tripping him.
Yeah, that same year, newspapers reported that a woman in Indiana was literally scared to death when her heart stopped after her daughter answered a knock on the door and screamed when a group of boys thrust a grinning pumpkin lantern in her face. What? I don't believe that one. I think that lady was drunk. she had a problem. In Omaha, Nebraska, by 1923, Halloween had become one of the most dangerous and feared nights of the year. The city's bad boys, which I'm not sure if that's an official title, caused havoc in the streets, damaging property and terrorizing their neighbors. The city's police commissioner came up with a solution. He would recruit 500 of the city's worst boys. So there's like a competition to
the
serve
bad
as
boys and the worst boys.
Yeah, they're battling it out. I would be like, I'm a worster boy.
It's like West Side Story going on.
Yeah, exactly. So they would serve as special policemen on Halloween, turning over to each a badge in an area of the city to monitor. The boy police, which sounds like a really like a gay attraction, the boy police. I can say that because I'm gay. I'm married to a man. The New York Times reports that the boy police will not have the power to make arrests, but will report to the regular officers. The strategy of turning petty criminals into miniature cops, it actually works, at least according to an author who wrote, every boy in the city wants to qualify. So it gets people, all these kids excited. They're like, hey, we actually have authority, we have power. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense because a lot of these kids were probably like the neighborhood bullies, and mm-hmm. so now they have real power. The commissioner suspected that his plan would nearly eliminate mischief on the holiday. So the success of this kind of spreads to other towns. Some other towns see that this idea of kind of distracting kids works, but they don't want to kind of give them power. So some other towns throw parties for kids. Other incentives don't work as well. For one example, in 1938, Boston's police commissioner gave engraved awards to the three schools in the districts which showed the least vandalism on Halloween, which is a total participation trophy. It's like the world's first ever participation trophy. Like, you had 80 fires, but you only had 79. You're the winner of tonight.
Good job.
So for obvious reasons, such incentives really worked. In Toronto, fire starters had been... So the previous year's fire and starters get invited to a public Halloween party meant to deter violence, but none of them show up. They're like, this is lame. Which is so funny to me because I always thought Canadians as being so polite, but they want none of this. It gets so bad that in the United States, the Senate gets involved and they try to rename Halloween National Youth Honor Day. No one cares. It doesn't work. Yeah. It's like, well, you guys getting excited for National Youth Honor Day? So here we go. The first trick-or-treating referenced ever in the media is in 1927. Does anyone want to guess where it is? You're wrong. Alberta, Canada. So back up a little bit. What does trick-or-treat mean? Danny, you know what trick-or-treat means?
No.
No?
I mean, I guess not.
Trick to be like mischievous and...
Close. Actually, I think you're right. I don't know why I said close. So it's a threat, basically.
Oh.
It means a trick... means back in this time that you're going to soap up their windows, you're going to toothpick their doorbells, which basically stops it. They just will keep ringing if you put a toothpick in the doorbells. Littering the porch with paper, burning film to create a bad smell, putting flower pots in chimneys. I know. Defecating. Can we say poop on this podcast? Pooping on political posters.
Wow.
And so at this point, it's more nuisance. Mm-hmm. So that's what the tricks meant. So they're basically saying, if you don't give us a trick or a treat,
we're gonna play give tricking. You a trick.
So during the 1930s, civic and religious authorities, community organizations, and neighborhood families begin to program parties, carnivals, and costume parties on Halloween to keep kids out of trouble. So people start to catch on. You know, it's not like today where Facebook, everything catches like fire. I mean, it's kind of slow burning news. You learn very slowly. But this is during the Great Depression, so there's not a lot of money. So neighborhoods would pool their resources together, and they would stage kind of house-to-house parties. On the first house might give out costumes such as a white sheet to be ghosts, or soot to smudge on kids' faces. The next house might give out treats. The next one might, after that, might have a basement set up as a tiny, like, haunted house. It's kind of cute.
Yeah.
And there's that much money then. So this slowly starts the morphing of kids getting dressed up and going house to house trick-or-treating. I had no idea. It's so interesting to me that something that we spend billions of dollars on now started during the Great Depression.
You know? The irony.
So trick-or-treating starts to spread, mostly from the western and middle states. It first appears in the media in Oregon in 1934. Is it Oregon or Oregon? Oregon.
Oregon. I think Oregon. Oregon.
Okay. We're pro-Oregon. Montana, 1934. Indiana, 1937. Nevada. Oh, my God. Nevada.
It's tomato. Yeah.
Nevada.
1938. California, 1938. And Washington in 1939. But not everyone's happy. Some newspapers call trick-or-treaters the gangsters of tomorrow because they believe that they're shaking people down. I mean,
that should have been the name of our podcast.
The gangsters of tomorrow.
Halloween one night and purge the next.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Whatever. The Reno newspaper points out that youngsters caused little material damage and that the police characterized the night as one of the most quiet Halloweens on record. So even though in the past Nevada was having these issues, trick-or-treating seems to work there. However, people are pushing back, calling these kids lazy, entitled, and some are calling it the ending of America, which I feel like every generation calls the kids the ending of America.
Totally.
Yeah. However, it is becoming destructive in some cities. So there's some cities where trick-or-treating is becoming a positive thing. In other areas, kids really are kind of terrorizing people who aren't aware that they're supposed to be giving candy out. So some cities think about banning Halloween, but they think through it and realize that probably wouldn't be a good idea because it's basically been really saying, like, let's really riot here.
Right.
So they decide, let's just pay these kids off. So trick-or-treating at this point gains steam. However, World War II curtails it because of sugar rationing. There's not very many candy to hand out. So when World War II is sort of ending, this is where things really heat up and get to a head. In some places, children actually start rioting. In 1945, near, I think it's pronounced Q Beach in Toronto, a group of high schoolers start bonfires on a main thoroughfare, fueling them with gasoline and pieces of fencing. Mounted police arrive, which I guess they really have mounties. I thought that was just a thing. So the mounties arrive. Instead of turning and running, the students pick up rocks and they throw them at the police.
Oh, wow.
The kids set up barricades to prevent fire trucks from entering the street and putting out the bonfires. When police are finally able to arrest the rioters, 13 people are booked. However, a mob of 7,000 kids, boys and girls, gathered and marched down to central booking, so basically like the police station, to free them. 7,000 kids.
Wow. Where are their mothers?
Corral your kids.
They are drunk. Like... They are drunk and
they're
watching their programs.
They're passing out candy, protecting their property. That's where they are.
Yeah. So it takes tear gas and water cannons to disperse these kids. Wow. I know.
Is this 2020?
I know.
Geez. No, it is good old 1945, which I always laugh. Like, people are like, the good old days. Yeah. There were never the good old days. So bail for the ringleaders cost in today's money $10,000.
Wow.
And they're kids. They can't afford it. Right. So they spend several weeks in jail.
Wow.
In another case of vandalism in 1948 in Long Island, New York, kids vandalize a vacant summer home. Once inside, they managed to do $10,000 worth of damage, which is $100,000 in today's money.
Oh.
The furnishings damage and the assault on the home included imported rugs, oil paintings. This is like Jordan's house. Oh. Well, not this part. Medieval spears and swords. Nerd.
That's
I'm
going to
go Catherine Knight on some kids.
Yeah, no kidding.
My house.
And autographed photographs of prominent people, like on the opera stage. What a weird mix of decor, I guess. But apparently the house's owner is kind-hearted, and he just asked them to pay $500 in damages, which is $5,000. So what a nice guy. So at the height of the post-war baby boom, trick-or-treating finally reclaims its place as sort of the what we know as today. It quickly becomes the standard practice. So at this point, sugar comes back and production. People are having lots of sex. Kids are being born, you know? You know what I mean, Courtney?
Happens.
Yeah, it happens. What also leads to this big boom are newly built suburbs. So there's a lot of babies being born. We're building out the suburbs at this point. But good old corporate America also comes into play. National advertising campaigns are launched specifically aimed at Halloween. So at this point, communities are endorsing it. And the appeal is obvious. Homeowners would prefer to hand out some good old Snickers, things like that, versus having to repair their property. The custom has finally been established in American popular culture, including in 1951, when trick-or-treating is depicted in the Peanuts comic strip, which, by the way, this is the 70th anniversary this week of the Peanuts.
Oh, wow. I didn't know
which
that.
Which is Charlie Brown, Snoopy. Jordan hates the Peanuts.
Not a fan.
Really?
Communist. Oh, you're a communist. No. In 1952, this is what seals Halloween trick-or-treating for the rest of our entire existence. Disney comes along.
Of course.
And they produce a cartoon called Trick or Treat, which features Donald Duck, my middle namesake, and his nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. So, of course, kill
kids.
My middle
namesake. I'm just kidding.
Donald is your middle name? That's awesome.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Oh, really?
Bethany, no,
Huey,
really.
Dewey, Louie, Young. So
Huey.
That's how trick-or-treating finally takes hold. There's a couple generations where things go well. So, but move forward to the 1970s. Parts of the Northeast, October 30th, the day before Halloween, becomes known as Mischief Night. I promise I can read. Why vandalism is usually kept within the lines of soaping windows, spraying shaving cream, and throwing eggs at houses or tossing toilet paper over trees and bushes. It does take a dark turn in Detroit and other Michigan cities. Fires are set ablaze in what becomes known as Devil's Night. And I remember Devil's Night as a kid. It was kind of a scary thing because you would see fires and things that on TV.
Of course, it's Detroit.
Stop. It's no longer, this no longer happens. The destruction there peaks in 1984 when more than 800 fires are set ablaze during a 3-night arson spree in Detroit. Detroit responds with a dawn to dusk curfew, which doesn't really do anything. However, in 1990, 30,000 volunteers decide that they've had enough. So with garden hoses at the ready, they start looking out for fires, and a bunch of volunteers participate in neighborhood patrols. And slowly but surely, Devil's Night finally comes to an end.
Wow, 1990.
Yeah, so it goes on for a very long time.
Wow.
So now in normal time, fires are just like a normal, what they would be on an average night. So I know it's all pretty crazy, but I had no idea how big of assholes kids were in the early 1900s, because we always hear about, you know, how the future of America is at stake because our kids are staring at their phones. Yeah. At least they're not rioting.
Not burning down the city.
And burning down the city. So
For candy.
And I did, I took a look at, just for fun, in 2019, what do you think the top costume for children was last year?
I'm trying to think of what movie, like what children's
That's
movie
what I
came.
Thought. But it's, well, Baby it's
shark.
Kind of.
Baby Shark.
A princess. 7.9% of kids are a princess. Wow. What do you think about adults?
Sexy kitten.
Witch, but I bet it was a sexy witch.
A sexy witch.
For pets, 9.3% of pets are dressed as a pumpkin. However, in the top 10, dog is a costume and cat is a costume, which is weird.
For a human?
Yes. Huh. No, for dogs and cats.
They dress up as a dog?
Yes. People dress their dog up as a dog and their cats, which I thought was ridiculous. But then I remembered when I was a kid, our cat's name was Muchka, which means cat in Hungarian. And our dog's name was Kucha, which means dog in Hungarian. So our dog's name was dog and our cat's name was cat. Which, you know, that's
just
embarrassing.
Don't dress your dog up as a dingo.
Oh, God.
Because it could take the baby. So I'm just curious, for people who are listening, let us know what your favorite costume was.
Yeah.
I love trick-or-treaters. I've heard that trick-or-treating is canceled this year, but I'm putting candy out.
You are?
Yes.
I don't think I want to.
I just have to. Whether it's just sitting on the porch and I just see them through the window.
What if someone just came and just
I just let
takes
it.
The whole,
you know, okay. I don't even care.
We should drive our house and take the bowl.
I see, and I don't just put candy. Ben hates this about me. But I tell you, every year I have kids, I get so excited. I put like Halloween pencils and...
You give kids pencils? Oh, you're that person.
Stop. It's mixed in with the candy, like what if they spider stab themselves? Rings and like sticky skeletons and all kinds of other fun things mixed in with the candy.
Do you give them a roll of pennies too?
No.
Listen, I might give kids candy now because they could put a livestock on my roof.
I also already bought the candy because it was on sale at Target.
Of course you. You have a Target story.
So whether we set it out or not, I bought it. We'll eat it. It was on sale at Target.
It's been really fun, like getting on, I don't know if you're on Nextdoor, whatever neighborhood you're in, you can join. And it's been fun and getting on there and reading about all the clever ideas, how people are going to hand out candy. Mm-hmm. Like some people are creating like candy chutes out their window.
That's awesome.
I guess. And people have thought about putting them in little bags and sticking them like on forks or something in their yard.
Yeah, I might do that. That's
but you're
idea.
Still touching the candy.
Yeah.
What do you do with gloves on?
Yeah, put gloves on.
If I'm a parent, I'm like,
I don't trust that.
By the way, the whole poison candy thing is really not true, right?
But is it?
It's not? Or it is?
I don't know. We might be covering that later.
Are we covering that?
Maybe.
We'll see.
Ooh, cliffhanger.
So it is October. Halloween's coming up. We've been talking. And I think we're going to do a bonus episode and release it the day before Halloween. We're going to tell creepy campfire stories. It'll just be a fun little bonus you should look out for the Friday of Halloween week. We're excited. Thank you for listening. You guys are the most incredible listeners. We are so encouraged by everything you have to say. If you're not already, hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify. Wherever you're listening, just make sure you hit follow or subscribe. We love you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Go to wildsocietypodcast.com. Send us candy.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.
Love you.